When did you first start playing piano?
I took elementary piano lessons as a child. I was 5 years old. And I took lessons for 5 or 6 years, but I didn't get very far with it, actually. I just learned the touch and the feeling of the piano and so forth. I never learned to read music very well.
Your father was a Strider piano player,
yeah,
wasn't
he? Yeah, he was a self-taught ragtime sort of piano player, you know, 12th Street Rag and Sweet Sue and those sort of things. He was pretty good for a self-taught player. And he did it semi-professional for a few years, I think.
So you consider yourself to be pretty self-taught since you never went to, like, a music college or...
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm self-taught. You know, my piano teacher doesn't take any credit for what I do.
You played trumpet for a while, too, right?
Yeah, I played trumpet starting in high school, and I played trumpet in an army band and in a few dance band situations.
When did you start playing professionally? And what kind of work
was
it?
Well, I played weekends and things like that in high school. And then in college, I played tours with college bands, you know, on vacations and so forth. But I started full-time in 1950 in Louisiana, Lake Charles, Louisiana, with a trio.
Were you discovered by a record company? How did you make your first record?
No, I wasn't discovered. I still haven't been discovered by a record company. When I went to New York, I was playing around with groups, Stan Getz and Al Cohen, Duke Sims, and... I met George Wallington, piano player, and Billy Wallington, his wife, who was in a promotional. And they had a connection with Prestige Records. And I had a tape of the Backcountry Suite, and George Wallington took it around and played it for Bob Weinstock, who was the president of Prestige, and he was interested in it. So that's the way that started.
What kind of contract did you have when you were starting out?
Oh, I got about $150 an album and a small percentage of the copies that weren't sold. No, I never made any money on those albums, John.
Now, is that the album that Prestige just reissued in the Creek
Bank?
Yeah,
they're reissuing all those now, yeah.
Do you make any money from the reissue of it?
I get a percentage royalty, which is pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't amount to much.
Artists have been recording your compositions. Bonnie Raitt recorded Everybody's Crying Mercy.
Yeah.
And you mentioned The Who did one of your recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make good royalties when somebody else?
Yeah, if a big group like The Who, I made money. Yeah, I make money off of those. You know, in fact, the writer royalties, the mechanical license royalties on one track on a big album is a lot more than... And I would make on all the royalties from any of my albums.
Why is that?
Well, because those groups, the big groups, sell, you know, the tremendous amount of albums. It's a completely different league as far as making money on the albums goes. According to the statements I get, you know, none of my albums have sold over 10,000 or 12,000 copies.
Yeah, well, most jazz albums don't come near selling the amount that big hit rock albums.
All right, yeah.
So, I love the lyrics to your songs. I mean, they work and they're meaningful too. You know, the word choices are always really good.
Right, thank
and
you.
And I noticed reading some liner notes to the Creek Bank album, as a matter of fact, that you were an English major in college.
Yeah, I got a BA in English. I was interested at one time in writing, but that's how it came out. You know, it came out in the songwriting. You know.
We were talking before about Parchment Farm and New Parchment Farm.
Yeah, right.
What made you rewrite it?
Well, just the situation. At that time, I kept running across these people, you know, whose introduction to Parchment Farm was through being arrested in the sit-ins and the civil rights demonstration things in the 60s, I mean it was. So many people told me that they went to Parchment Farm under those circumstances that I wrote a different version for those people.
for listeners who might not be familiar with the song, can you kind of give us a lyric synopsis, so to speak?
Well, Well, the first one was from a point of view of a prisoner who had shot his wife. The second one was a point of view of a prisoner who had just been put in jail for civil rights activities.
Mm-hmm. John Mayall recorded that, and yeah, I think had an album called Parchment Farm, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know you recorded, but I don't know what it was on that, what the album was called that or not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you been singing all along, like when you started playing?
Yeah, I sang as a child. My first public performance was singing and playing ukulele at a grade school. Yeah, and my next public performance was singing and playing piano at high school. So I've sung all along. Yeah.
This is a kind of awkward question, and I don't mean to try to make you choose between the two, but do you consider yourself primarily a pianist or a vocalist?
Well, I don't know. You know, I've been asked that a lot, and my answer is I always consider.
Your music always seems to swing, too.
Well, yeah, I still adhere to the old idea of the jazz swinging, you know, and have in the traditional way. I mean, a traditional swing, not completely. I don't mean I'm confining it to any certain rhythm pattern or anything, but I think that you should now and then it should get down to just real swinging, you know, like the way jazz bands have always swung, you know, the way they've swung.
Did bebop change your style?
Well, I went through the bebop period, you know. There were times when I was pretty much influenced by bebop players mostly, but and some people still say that I still play bebop. I still play some bebop, I suppose, but there's a lot of other things now. You know, what I'm involved in now is there's a lot of different elements from different places that I'm trying to blend together, and bebop's just one of them.
Mm-hmm. Who have you been playing with recently, with your trio?
I have a bass player, Jack Hanna, from Kansas City, that's been playing with me pretty much for the last couple of years. And right now the drummer here tonight is Stan Gage. He hasn't been with me long, but I use different drummers in different parts of the country, you know, and different bass players sometimes. But Jerry Grinnelli, a West Coast drummer, has been playing with me a lot, and he made the record with me. Jack Hanna and Jerry Grinnelli, who I use on the record. I also had some horn players. Al Cohen did a couple of tracks, and I did some tracks with three horns, and I had Al Persino, Joe Farrell, and David Sanborn. So,
what label is your new record on?
Atlantic.
Uh-huh. What kind of tunes do you play on it?
I did some of the old things and some new things. It's about half new and half old. Mine's on Vacations on it, and
glad to hear that.
If You Only Knew, and a couple of other, Swing Machine, a few other things, and there's some new, lot of new material.
When do you expect it will be on the market?
Late August or early September, I think, is what they said.
Jazz musicians don't usually get the kind of, you know, commercial push, big ads in Rolling Stone or in the music periodicals. Do you feel satisfied with the publicity that your record label gives you?
No, definitely not. Now, my record label hasn't given me any publicity. You know, I've had people call up, you know, time and time again and ask for promotional materials in cities across the country from Atlantic Records, and they wouldn't even know that I'm still with them. You know, that's happened so many times, you know. So because I've done so little recording over the years that I still owe them albums. This album I just made is, I have an agreement with them that, you know, that within a certain period of this one, release, that they'll either give me a release or a new contract. So, but up to now, they've just sort of dropped me. The last few years, you know, they've just sort of dropped me completely. And so that I haven't gotten any promotion from that.
Would you like to change labels?
I can really can't say, because I think they're all the same, basically. You know, like all record companies. I've been with, you know, I was with a small label, which is Prestige, which deals with like a very specialized audience, and it's a low sale thing, you know, and a low money thing. And then I went with a big company, I went with Columbia, And the first record I made with Columbia didn't sell much, so right away they started putting pressure on me to do real commercial things, and so I left them, went with Atlantic as a sort of a compromise, because Atlantic at that time was a small, was a medium-sized independent company, but now they're huge, you know, so I really don't see that much difference in a record label. You know, they're all corporations and they're all trying to sell as many records as they can, and they're not interested in unless, they're not really interested in you unless they feel that there's a potential for some sort of mass sale, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of money involved. So, you know, I don't think it matters that much about the particular label.
Well, I have to say about your albums, though, that they're always pretty pure. I mean, with someone, I think, especially vocalists, there's always that possibility that the producer's going to throw in 1,000 strings mm-hmm. and kind of schlock up the whole production.
That's been suggested a lot of times. I just withstood all that by not doing anything. You know, that's the reason I made so few records. I've gone 3 years without recording, and in fact I've gone about 3.5 years now. This will be the first record that I've made in about 3.5 or maybe 4 years. So it's been, that's what I mean, it's just been sort of a standoff, you know. But there's been suggestions for all sorts of ways to soup it up, you know, and over the years, you know.
Now say you really felt that sales would really be increased by the producer's suggestions of additions, you'd say no. You have been
well,
saying
no. Well, you know, I have said no. You know, it just depends on what it was. It depends on what it would be. You know, it depends on how much control I have over it. See, they usually start out by trying to exert as much control over you as they can, and then if they can't, then little by little, you know, you're able to do your own things in your own way, and that's what it's been coming down to, pretty much. Like the last album, the one I just did, you know, after years of just not recording, we sort of got together on what I'd do. You know, I could do some of my old standards with some horn backgrounds. And at first they wanted to get an arranger and wanted me to work with an arranger, but, you know, so finally it ended up, though, I did the arrangement myself. And so it'll be something that that I'm satisfied with doing.
Does the new album have a title?
I think the tentative title is Mozart. That's what they suggested, and it's all right with me. I don't care what it's called, really.
Okay. Mose Allison, I want to thank you for coming by to WUHY. It's really been fantastic to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.